You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hi, and welcome to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I am Grant Goldberg, joined by Spike Friedman. And Spike, that was a pretty wild finish to the football games this weekend, wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, this is the Locked On Seahawks podcast where you get, you know, you get two real sports experts telling you the takes you wouldn't otherwise get. Right. And this take is, yeah, that was a wild game.
Yeah, no. Like, aside from the finish too, that was a really good, entertaining game. Obviously, we're talking about the Saints and Vikings.
It was wild at the end.
Yeah, it was insane. I think that, you know, obviously it'll go down in history. It's already named as the Minnesota Miracle.
Can we just say, on Minnesota Miracle, it's fine.
That's I mean, there's been other miracles in sports that have that name. So, like, maybe if, like, they weren't so pressed to, like, come up with something so fast, they could come up with something better. But on the spot, all things considered, like, in the moment, not bad, I guess.
Yeah.
All right, you gotta take in a lot of things into consideration.
always. I mean, a lot of factors to cover. A lot to analyze.
When naming a iconic football play. But there were three other games, not as good. I mean, I think the best two games, obviously, were on Sunday in Jaguars-Steelers. And the aforementioned Saints Vikings. We're gonna talk a little bit about each game, and then we're going to get into the big news, which isn't necessarily exciting news.
Yeah,
the Seahawks are, you know, it's all but done to sign Brian Schottenheimer to become their newest offensive coordinator, which is uninspiring to say the least.
We'll get into it later,
but for now we'll talk about all the football games that happened this weekend, and we'll start with, what do you want to start with?
Let's go chronologically.
Okay. Do you want to start us off?
Yeah, sure. Falcons, Eagles. That game was really boring. It was really boring.
It's how you would expect. If Nick Foles were to win a playoff game, that's the outcome you'd expect.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you got an Eagles team that is down its left tackle and quarterback. You have a Falcons team that refuses to play to its offensive strengths. You have two defenses that are incredibly athletic and good, but not exactly, I wouldn't say dominant units. I think weirdly, the team with the most dominant defensive unit gave up 42 points this weekend. But neither the Eagles nor the Falcons was just like a boring chess match played by two not very good chess players. I guess that isn't quite fair because the Eagles did game plan the heck out of it in order to get Nick Foles into a bunch of comfortable situations. They had a lot of screen passes that were effective. They were able to, you know, move the ball pretty well. But in terms of, you know, creating the sort of opportunities to score touchdowns that they seem to be able to do against most teams at will with Carson Wentz at quarterback, obviously they were not able to do that at all against a good but not great Falcons defense. And then on the other side of the ball, it's just like, yeah, that Eagles pass rush is good. The Eagles are good on defense, but their secondary and their linebackers in coverage in particular should not be able to shut down that Falcons passing attack, but they did, and so we end up with Nick Foles in the NFC title game. I don't know.
I think, well, first of all, the Falcons got beat by the Nick Foles is my quarterback offense ran by Doug Peterson, and it's kind of similar to Blake Bortles is my quarterback offense that's run in Jacksonville. A lot of screens, you know, reliant on the run, you know, lots of, you know, bootlegs and tight ends in the game plan. And both of those teams won today. I mean, not today, but this weekend. Some would say the Falcons, you know, the game went through their hands. Others would say, no, they just got beat by the Eagles. Less creative people. Another game that happened on Saturday was Titans-Patriots, and it kind of ended like you would think it would. Titans lost by a huge margin to the Patriots, which is unsurprising. The Patriots kind of weren't ever in jeopardy of losing that game. There's not much to say about that, I don't think. I mean, Brady is going to advance to the AFC Championship game. This is like clockwork at this point. Yeah. Do you have anything, you know, outstanding from that game that you want to talk about?
Well, there was I didn't play high school football, but my high school, at a homecoming game, we were up against a really good team that had Lorenzo Booker and Whitney Lewis on it. Those guys, Lorenzo Booker made it to the NFL. Whitney Lewis sort of flamed out at USC, but they were both number one in their class at running back and wide receiver. And on the first play of the game, we pulled some trick play to go up 7-0. And then lost like 48-7 or, you know, something along those lines. And that the Patriots game very much felt like that, where Mariota was able to get that early touchdown, but you could feel that it wasn't anything that was going to hold. The Titans just, it was just released that they're moving on from Mularkey after saying that they wouldn't do that after beating the Chiefs. I think the rumor is that they're going to bring in Josh McDaniels. So I also respect that the Titans went full Kevin Durant, but like backwards. They did the Kevin Durant thing the right way of losing, but then getting the guy who beat them to come in and make them better. So full respect to the Titans for how they did that.
Right. I often say the Titans are the anti-Kevin Durant.
the hottest of all takes.
We are going to take a short break and then come right back to you with the rest of these playoff games that happened this weekend and some Schottenheimer talk.
We are back, Locked On Seahawks. I'm Spike Friedman, as always, alongside Grant Goldberg. Talking non-Seahawks football still, talking Jags-Steelers. This game ended up being 45-42. In a game that was very strange all the way through. Grant, what are your top two takeaways from Jags-Steelers?
Top two takeaways, let's see. I think that Jacksonville forever has Ben Roethlisberger shook. I think that was evident. And then number two, I want with my whole heart for Jacksonville to win against the Patriots in the AFC Championship game, because the world deserves a Super Bowl with Blake Bortles, with either Case Keenum or Nick Foles. I think that, you know, in a weird NFL year, that's the Super Bowl that we deserve.
See, I've got the white hottest take for a possible Seahawks fan. But as listeners to the podcast know, the Jacksonville Jaguars are my mortal enemy. And so, go Pats. You know, go Pats. Mm. I want to see the Pats. I don't want to see a damn Jaguars versus Vikings 3-0 Super Bowl. I don't want it. And Blake Bortles is bad to watch. He's really
We forgot to mention today's show is brought to you by Breitbart.
Like, the Patriots, like, just do it. Like, just don't make me watch Blake Bortles in the Super Bowl. I am not on the Jalen Ramsey hype train. I mean, he is a great player, but, like, the antics are corny. I don't need it, man. Jalen Ramsey, corny. Put it on the bulletin board for him. I don't like that team. I don't like it. In terms of, like, it's like if the Seahawks rolled with Matt Flynn through their prime. And, like, that would have been fun, I guess, for us. But it's also, like, kind of dreadful. Like, they didn't do the right thing, which was go get a real quarterback.
Yeah.
And now being, like, halfway rewarded for it. Nah, man. Go get humbled by the Pats.
I think the Jaguars don't have an app replacement on the roster, and that's a product of not going to get him. But, I mean, it's a little bit of a different situation because Matt Flynn was signed, Russell Wilson was drafted, and Blake Bortles was drafted at, what, third overall?
He was drafted third overall 4 years ago. Go get another quarterback. go get anybody other than Chad Henne.
Does this qualify as a hot take that if they added Eli Manning to their offense, it only adds maybe one or two more wins?
But that's plenty. That'd be great. Eli Manning, yes, it only adds one or two wins because they won, 11, 12 games this year? Like, they were really good because their defense is really good. They're just unwatchable on offense. They're just unwatchable, and they don't need to be. That offensive line is fine. Fournette is skilled. The receivers aren't great, but they're good enough if you have a real quarterback in there. They should have signed Kaepernick. They should have traded for Manning. They should have done anything. They should have signed Case Keenum. You know, like, Blake Bortles is just dreadful. Like, I just, it's like watching a college game with him where you're just like, at any given moment, a play can be perfectly executed and the quarterback isn't even going to give his receiver a chance to, like, deflect the ball into the other team's hands. I'm just donezo. I'm donezo with Bortles. Okay. The more they win, the less I like them.
Oh, right. I think we're donezo with, with Jag Steelers talk right now. So we'll move right into the game of the week. Yeah. In everybody's mind, not just mine, Saints Vikings, and it was a theatrical game to say the least. The Saints were down 17-0 at one point to the Vikings, and they clawed their way back. They took the lead with like less than a minute left, and
29 seconds. So the end of the game, it was the Vikings. The Saints take the lead. Vikings retake the lead with a minute and 29 left. Saints retake the lead with 25 seconds left. And then the Vikings march down the field and score the go-ahead touchdown.
You know what's so incredible about football? It's that, like, anybody can, like, mess up and something incredible can happen. And, yeah. Like, you would think that it'd be a safe bet having a safety over the top, even in a play like that. But the safety went full Leroy Jenkins mode and tried to do it all himself and take out Diggs before he could get out of bounds. It's so incredible because, like, Marcus Williams, I was reading, was like the sixth surest tackler at safety his position at safety. Which is, like, so incredible because, like, you expect people to make the tackle. It's a guy that does make his tackles. And then, you know, obviously in the biggest moment of the season, it doesn't happen. I think it's almost as catastrophic as the Raheem Moore, like, miss tip for Broncos Ravens. That's the play it closest reminds me of.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and, yeah, I mean, it's obviously a really bad tackle. It's right. Really bad. I will say that on the one hand, it's really bad. On the other hand, if he does bring him down in bounds and, like, clearly he's trying to, like, change his angle to not knock him out of bounds.
Right.
I mean, if he gets out of bounds there, what is that? Like a 49-yard field goal? So it's about a 50% chance the Vikings win the game. So, and going into that play, you've got to give him like a 5% chance of winning the play because they've got to hit that exact pass and then be able to get out of bounds or move it down the field.
Well, think about it too. The play was ran with 10 seconds left on the clock.
Yeah.
And if say that Williams does make the tackle and it's a 49-yard, they have to get all get set in what, 3 seconds?
There's no way if he stays in bounds that they get up and get the spike off. It's because they were, 20 yards down the field? I mean, like...
Yeah, it was such a risk-reward kind of play.
He had to get out of bounds. Like, he had to get out of bounds there. And so Williams trying to keep him in bounds is what blows it all up. But it's just, it looks so weird on the replay. But then, I mean, credit to Diggs, because my instinct as that play is going down is like, yo, dude, step out of bounds.
I screamed that with my brother. We were watching on the couch, and we both, at the same time, went, get out of bounds. What are you doing? Yeah.
Especially when he gets like 5 yards past the catch, when he gets to that 45-yard field goal, and you're like, oh, they are now favorites to win the game if he just steps out of bounds. And then you're like, oh no, they've just won the game. And I mean, it was incredible. I think I mean, A, it was just a great, it was great to watch Drew Brees take a punch from a great defense like the Vikings, who were pretty quietly almost as good as the Jaguars. It's a really great defensive unit they've got.
Yeah.
It was great to watch Drew Brees take a punch from them and then come back the other way and, you know, throw a bunch of haymakers back at them, which was, I thought it was a thrilling performance by the Saints offense in the second half. I thought it was a great game plan out the gates by Pat Shurmur and the Vikings. I thought they did a great job. I just thought, given that the game ended because the safety for the Saints blew it, it's weird. Like, the game was largely not blown by anybody, which was what was so exciting about it, is it wasn't a Bortles-esque. Like, that Steelers-Jags game was just a bunch of nonsense where, like, it was just like, how does a 45-42 game, and amazing work by Calais Campbell, by the way, predicting that that would be the final
score. Yeah, that was incredible.
But you guys should look that up. But the Saints-Vikings game really was those two teams playing their games against each other and just having it end that way. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, the closest thing we've had as Seahawks fans was the Jermaine Kearse catch in the NFC title game.
Yeah.
Which was its own version of amazing. But that game was like, the Seahawks played really badly for 54 minutes in that game.
Right.
This was a half and then a half and then a final 2 minutes.
I thought it was close. I mean, the emotional roller coaster I'd compare it to was watching the San Francisco 49ers drive all the way downfield and then have Richard Sherman tip the ball to Malcolm Smith for the game-winning interception. Yeah. I immediately thought of that. It, funny, because, like, you know, pass play with the curse touchdown to send us to the Super Bowl. But I kind of likened it to that because, you know, they were threatening to score. They had that fourth down conversion earlier in the drive, and they were looking solid. And then obviously you have, you know, that kind of play where it makes you jump off the couch and scream all the same. And
well,
so,
and the other thing that it's like is when it was in the Russell Wilson's rookie season when we lost to the Falcons.
Right,
they hit 30. That same play, but I think it was Cam knocked the guy out of bounds, and then we lost on a, 49-yard field goal? Or so, you know, like...
Oh, that prevent defense. Oh.
Yeah, I mean, and to be fair to the Saints, they weren't even running a prevent. They were, you know, right. They didn't have an extra safety over the top. They were running the right defense. They were ready to hit the guy out of bounds. You know, like, it was all there. It was all ready to go. And I think also, yeah, whatever. We don't need to re-adjudicate.
The last note is that I got to commend Marcus Williams for going for that because, like, it's a total risk reward. If you get it, you win the game. And if you don't, obviously, you know, that just happens. And so, yeah, I mean, like, not many players are going to try to make that kind of effort, and they're going to go for the safe play, which, you know, obviously in hindsight, yeah, he should have went for it because he didn't, you know, execute very well. But, you know, at the same time, you know, it takes stone. So, In a world where he's being mocked all over, shout out to Marcus Williams for at least going for it.
Absolutely, and shout out to him. He gave a great post game interview on it. Like, he's a rook. That Saints secondary is going to be good for a long time. Hopefully, yeah. He gets a chance to redeem himself.
Yeah. Before we take a break, I'm gonna just quickly shout out George Edwards from the Vikings. He's the defensive coordinator because in a world, obviously in the NFL, where the offensive coordinator and Pat Shurmur gets a lot of credit, and I don't ever hear George Edwards' name. And so he had a really good game to start the game, and, you know, it was credit to Drew Brees for making it close. But George Edwards, he's a free agent after this year, so there needs to be more diversity, and he should be getting, you know, head coaching looks.
That's a great point. That's a really great point. The other shout-out I want to give is to mybookie.ag, for hoodwinking us with a +4 line on this game where we all picked the Saints, and yet Vegas was giving the line a +5.5, meaning that when Case Keenum took a knee at the end, that the Saints did cover, but when we picked the game live on the podcast last week with Zach Whitman, we all missed the pick because of Stephon Diggs' run down the field. So credit to mybookie.ag for hoodwinking the Locked On Seahawks podcast, and we will be back with more Locked On Seahawks podcast, talking Brian Schottenheimer right after this.
All right, we are back. with more Locked On Seahawks. It's Grant Goldberg, Spike Friedman, at our names on Twitter, at Locked Seahawks on Twitter. And Spike, we've gotten to the grand finale of this show.
Oh, God.
So, over the weekend, a hire was made. Seattle Seahawks are expected to make Brian Schottenheimer their new offensive coordinator. In a world where, you know, mediocrity wasn't accepted in this last year, and the clear solution to that was obviously Brian Schottenheimer in the Seahawks' mind. Initial reaction to this potential hire, Spike?
I don't like it.
Me either.
We talked a lot about retread head coaches and how they make for really good coordinators. That doesn't hold for retread coordinators. Right.
If you look at Schottenheimer, bad at your offensive coordinator job, you plug him in at the same job, chances are it's not going to be good.
Yeah, and I'll say this. We don't know for sure. Schottenheimer's never had a quarterback the caliber of Russell Wilson when he was coordinating, and when he was a QB coach, he worked with Phillip Rivers and Drew Brees.
And Andrew Luck in his best season.
Yeah, so was it Andrew Luck's best season?
It was up there. He had career-high numbers in a few departments.
Got it. Okay. Well, yeah, so he has been – it's sort of Schottenheimer, if we had hired him to be the QB coach, I'd be like, yeah, all right. In the same way that there's that thing of, like, bad head coaches become good coordinators, bad coordinators become good position coaches for the same reason. But Schottenheimer as a coordinator, man, his track record is bad. When we talk about mediocrity, that's his upside. His best ever finish in DVOA with an offense in the NFL is 11th. When he took over Georgia's unit, they fell from 25th in the league to 85th in D1 college football. And that was 2 years ago, and look at them this year. They look great. So he hasn't maximized talent. Rex Ryan talked about the hire today on 710 ESPN and talked about how there was a game where he went to Schottenheimer at like halftime and was like, why are we still running the ball? And he was basically like, Rex, you told me you wanted to run it 40 times this game, and I'm just following your game plan. And Rex was like, that's great. You know, his biggest weakness is that he follows the head coach too much. And that sometimes the head coach wants to run too much. And I'm like, man, that's not a good fit.
No.
Seattle. That's not what we need. And like it clarifies a little bit why Pete might want him, but it is Pete grabbing the reins more tightly on the offense rather than allowing someone to innovate on the offense. And we talked about how that would make more sense on the defensive side of the ball going.
Look, we don't know. We don't know how this is going to turn out. I'm not despondent over the hire, but it is an uninspiring hire, and I don't know that it's an upgrade over Daryl Bevel. How do you feel about it?
Okay, well, I'll start off by saying Brian Schottenheimer DVOA is not a pretty search result on Twitter. Shoddy, I'm going to call him Shoddy, has been in the league as an offensive coordinator for, what, 8 or 9 years, and his teams have finished average or above average in DVOA twice, you know, once with a 12th place finish in 2006, and his second best finish was a 16th place finish. And so you're dealing with that. And so Ian Rappaport said Schottenheimer was their top choice, and the Seahawks wanted to get him before other teams potentially offered him positions, which to me, it kind of sounds like a panic hire, to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, I get that he is your top choice, but at least review other candidates more closely. Do your research. Be thorough. What has suggested that this was the clear-cut right move? Like, it's way too early in the process to just go forward with a candidate like Schottenheimer. This tells me that, A, maybe Seattle didn't have a very big pool of candidates that either they liked or were interested in them, or B, they had tunnel vision on Schottenheimer all along, which is problematic in the first place. I will say for Schottenheimer, like you mentioned earlier, Seattle gives him I'd say his most talented player in their prime in Russell Wilson. Obviously, they need an offensive line coach and a run game coordinator to give us a little bit more of a peek of what we can be seeing during the season. He's only 44. He, like I said, coached Andrew Luck through one of his best seasons. And Seattle probably has their best crop of offensive linemen since they won the Super Bowl. They need, I think now more than ever, they need to make a home run hire in that department to help prop up this Schottenheimer hire.
I vacillate on like what the team needs to do, because like really what the team needs to do is like draft and develop some more players. Like, we're too old right now.
Yeah.
We just like, we need a great draft, and no, the cupboard isn't bare, but the cupboard, we're getting low on like pantry goods right now.
Yeah.
And so I get why we're maybe not the most appealing place for an innovative coordinator. And also, as we saw with this Saints team, you know, we are, when you've got a good quarterback and you've got some really talented pieces in play, you are one home run draft away from being right back in the Super Bowl hunt. And let's face it, the Seahawks were a kicker away from being in the Super Bowl hunt this year.
Yeah.
Which, despite getting blown out by the Rams, that's 100% true. Teams get blown out and win the Super Bowl. Like, especially if it's by a good team like the Rams were. So, you know, it's tough. It's tough because, like, I vacillate between, like, being like, ooh, this is a team on the decline that's getting older and needed something interesting to happen, and being like, well, the team's actually pretty good. They were a couple plays away from being right in the thick of a pretty brutal NFC race. And they've got good pieces. And really what it comes down to is this offseason from a player personnel perspective more than a scheme perspective. So, you know, again, I'm trying not to be despondent about a hire of a guy who's just like nothing great, man. But we'll see. We'll see. It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting.
Yeah, I think that, like, obviously Seattle was a kicker away, and if they had better injury luck, you know, you put them in the playoffs, and there's a chance they go up against Nick Foles, Case Keenum, yep, Jared Goff, you know, saying that after the Rams beat the Seahawks like they did, but I mean, it's Jared Goff, and the Seahawks are, you know, experienced in the playoff. They know what it takes to win.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that you had a very good point in likening the team to where the Saints were. Even the Seahawks finished with a better record with the injury that they had, with the kicker that they had, than the Saints did in the year before this one. And so it takes a good draft to kind of propel them back into the contender range. And I think that, you know, John Schneider obviously has the capability to do that. I think that they're going to have to add a little bit more depth. And especially with Schottenheimer coming in, I think that you kind of have to hit on your skill positions even better than you would have to in a normal draft, because you're going to need these players not to be overly talented, but you have to have them, you know, show what they have to offer in what could be, you know, a meddling offense that is kind of just like in the middle of the pack. So they need to be talented. So talented, in fact, that it shows through a Brian Schottenheimer ran offense.
We'll see.
Yeah, there's so much time. There's so many more dominoes that need to fall in an offensive line coach hire, quarterbacks coach hire, defensive coordinator. We still need more clarity on that. We have the draft coming up. We have free agency coming up. So there are still so many things that need to happen, and before we can make even a better judgment on that, off, you know, not seeing this offense run at all.
Yeah.
All right. Do you think that covers it for today?
It does.
All right. Yeah. So today's show was not brought to you by anything, but if you go to a particular website in iTunes, I don't think it's a website, it's more of an application. But if you go to iTunes and leave a 5-star review, you can enter your Twitter handle in it and enter yourself to win a Pro Football Focus Edge membership. You can go on draft.com. You can play, I don't know how many drafts are going to have with these AFC and NFC championship games, but I know they always have NBA drafts, and so you can take advantage of that. Use the promo code LONFL for that to get a free draft on your first visit. And that does it. I think that we covered a lot in the show. We covered playoff football. We covered, you know, Seahawks and Brian Schottenheimer. And so we'll get back to you tomorrow. And we're going to talk to you a little bit more, maybe about this hire, maybe about guys that the Seahawks need to go with now that they've hired Schottenheimer. And so there's still a lot more to talk about for us. So for Locked On Seahawks, I'm Grant Goldberg signing off.
And I'm Spike Friedman, also signing off.